and they didn't allow him to speak at the convention. That was.
Books and Ideas. I am DJ Safikar. We're broadcasting not far from the village of Putatoy, where the village of Putatoy once stood, populated by the Patwin Native Americans. We're doing a book called Tolstoy in the Purple Chair, My Years of Magical Reading, by Nina Sankwich. So I'll give you a brief summary of what we covered. Nina Sankwich loses her sister, Anne Marie, with whom she's very close. She is heartbroken and must deal with her sorrow. In order to come to terms with her sister's death and with herself, Nina decides to read books. She decides to intensely read every day for a year. Sankwich begins this project on her 46th birthday. She is hoping for answers, to answer the question of why she deserves to live and how to live now. Tolstoy and the Purple Chair is about Nina's attempt to deal with the loss of her sister by means of reading books. It's about how to use books as therapy for grief and depression. It's about how we recover and process our memories. We have covered more than half of the book in the previous shows, and we have looked very closely at a number of issues like grief and guilt. The book is now more philosophical and focuses on the question of how to live. We ended last week's show with chapter 13. Chapter 14 is about sex. It is called Sex by the Book. So I'm going to skip this chapter. What? What is it? Some of you are disappointed and complaining. All right, then. I will do the chapter on sex for you. Yankovic argues that our desire for sex is more than just biological, because it survives even after childbirth. But she asks, where does it come from? She then looks at a few novels in which sexual desire play a prominent role. A Celibate Season by Carol Shields and Blanche Howard is about a couple who have two teenage kids and they have to spend 10 months apart because of the wife's career. The pain and loneliness of separation, combined with the desire for companionship, lead both of them to bouts of adultery. It isn't falling out of love that has sent each into the arms of another. It's falling out of reach. Nina writes, "The wife has journeyed off without her husband, and nature abhors a vacuum. Another body must fill the empty space left by the vacant spouse." Jim Harrison in The English Major also sets his character out on a journey alone. Cliff is a 60-year-old high school English teacher whose wife, Vivian, has left him for another man. Cliff decides to visit all the states he dreamed about as a child, but has never seen. He starts out on his road trip with an ordered plan of a specific route to follow and things to do along the way. His plan is blown off course by the unexpected addition of Maribel, an ex-student. Maribel hitches a ride with Cliff and becomes not only a fellow passenger on his journey west, but an instigator of wild sex and unanticipated layovers. Cliff thinks a lot about sex, why men want sex, why women do, and why desire flames up, fizzles out, and then starts up all over again. Cliff realizes that desire can be set off by something as simple as a smile. Nina notes that sensation of desire can be felt through words alone. She laments that for some couples, that initial fervent passion for their mate seems to fade away after a while. Sankovic then lists a few books which she claims can inspire blazing renewals of physical devotion in even the most dated relationships, such as The Sailor from Gibraltar by Marguerite Duras and The Delta of Venus by Anais Nin. Cliff, an English major, never tires of sex, but he does come to understand that given more than enough sex, you see that it isn't the be-all and end-all of human existence. Yes, sex is just one of the bindings that holds a marriage together, but it's a pretty good one. Cliff and his wife come back together by the end of the novel, reeled in by the history they share, by their ease and comfort with each other, and by their festering mutual desire. As Cliff explains it, love, friendship, and an accumulation of years spent together counts for a lot. But sex counts for something too. Nina writes that the book that saved her through college many times over and over again was Berger's Daughter by Nadine Gordimer. The novel offers so much to emulate in the title character, Rosa Berger. Rosa is struggling to define herself and her future after the death of her father, a prominent anti-apartheid activist. She is fleeing both the celebrity and the weight of inherited duty brought on by being the daughter of a famous and influential man. Rosa is tempted to remove herself from the socially responsible and politically committed life she grew up in and to carve out a quiet and eventful existence for herself. Rosa goes to the south of France and falls in love. She finds solace being a couple among other couples. She likes the privacy and the anonymity, the peace and normalcy. Rosa considers settling in south of France and leaving South Africa forever behind in the past. But her past will not let her rest in the retired existence of satiety and comfort. She feels a connection to South Africa, and she returns to the country of her youth to fulfill the commitment made long ago by her father. Rosa becomes a guiding character for Nina and informs many of her thoughts about her own life goals and dreams. She likes her conception of love and sex as a place of quiet comfort and hidden joy. Nina writes, "What holds a couple together is more than just passion. It is the confabulation of two, a conversation spanning years, sometimes carried out through words and sometimes through caresses. In the end, it is the acknowledgement of their years of mutual experience as parents, as friends, as husband and wife that brings Cliff and Vivian back together in the English major. The couple who had to live apart from a celibate season also make it through their crisis. They never lost their passion for each other. It's more as if it were misplaced and then found again. Where does desire come from? In the books that Nina is reading, they come from many points of stimulus, both physical and mental. Words steer desire, as surely as touch. But how to hold on to desire? According to Sankovic, desire comes from love between two people and also gives back to bonds between them. Sex strengthens the connection between a couple, adding muscle and flexibility and longevity to a union that's based on much more than just a physical need. I like her views, but of course sex and desire are complex subjects, and there are many perspectives from which we can look at them. This is a view of an intelligent, well-educated, and well-read woman who is a wife and mother. She has also a law degree, and she's worked as a lawyer. Let's just say there are other views also. All right. All right. We're in chapter 15 now. In this chapter, Nina tells us about this bench in the New York Central Park, which is dedicated to Anne Marie and inscribed with the words she once spoke to her husband. For whom can end in despair? For who can end in despair when there is such beauty in the world? Her family meets every year at the anniversary of Anne Marie's death at this bench in the park. Nina also sometimes goes there by herself or with a friend. Nina had always hoped for the possibility of some sort of existence after death, because since childhood it is nothingness that comes after death that frightened her. Nina knows that her sister is gone, but she still sometimes feels her presence, or as if she is hovering. When she tells this to her remaining sister, Natasha, she also confirms this and says, "I know that she's here when we're talking about her." The family have a picnic every year, and they try to have fun on this occasion with the kids running around and playing. Nina feels Anne Marie's presence so strong that she wonders, was she there with us? Could she be? When Nina goes there by herself once, and when she looks and she looks up, she sees a raccoon overhead, peaceful and secure, clinging comfortably to a branch and just looking at her. She wonders, are you an apparition of Anne Marie, trying to communicate with me? Another time, Nina is there with a friend and crying when suddenly a big branch comes out of nowhere and hits her on the head. Nina turns to her friend and says, did you see that? Anne Marie hit me. She's telling me to stop crying. Ghost or not, Anne Marie still occupies a space in Nina's life. By using her memories, Nina is able to bring her sister back before her. Nina writes, no, she is not reborn, and she's probably not a ghost drifting above me or an angel singing in heaven. But nor is she nothing. And there is not nothing after her death. There are our memories. Yankovic writes, in remembering Anne Marie, I had a warrant against the worst death has to offer. I laugh when remembering the funny stuff, smile at the thought of her kindness, and find courage for tomorrow and the hereafter. There is no void where there is memory. After I die, someone will remember me and bring me back. The next chapter, chapter 16, is largely about her kids, her four sons. They are of various ages and a few years apart. One is graduating from high school, another son from middle school, and a third from elementary school. They are growing up, and Nina laments that their days of entwined hours spent together are dwindling. their lives are spreading out, away from their parents and into places Nina can't go, where she was not invited and where she could not protect them. Whatever protection, Nina writes, I could offer now came in the values that I tried to instill through sharing and teaching an example. But what had I instilled? She has a drawing of one of her sons in her bedroom. It is called Mom Making Dinner. Nina is holding a baby in her arm. It is the youngest, and he's crying. With the other arm, she is trying to catch a bowl of salad that is falling to the floor. She has a surprised look on her face, but she is also happy. Nina writes, my life for so long was that drawing, mishaps, and mayhem, and screams, but also laughter, togetherness, and light. Lots of light. The light still shone for me whenever I looked at my kids, but they will be gone soon. Yankovic writes, I know so much about my kids, but what terrifies me is what I don't know. Nina sees in the book she is reading that year what she hopes for her children and what she fears for them. She wonders, what good examples and advice had I passed on to them? What stuck with them? Of all the life lessons I lobbed their way. In a swirling of voices and scenes, Nina finds guidance not only for her life, but for what she wants for her children. In The Picts and the Martyrs by Arthur Ransom, Nina reads about a perfect summer spent outdoors, freed from supervision and rules. The kids in Ransom books have a great time together. Defiant of adult intervention, Ransom characters set their own course of fun. The kids also take care of themselves and each other, having a good time and getting along with very little bickering or whining. Nina hopes that her kids behave like Ransom kids, with bravery, common sense, and joy. Yankovic then looks at a couple of books where the main characters are kids who are growing up in difficult circumstances. Juno Diaz, Brief Wondrous Life of Oscar Wao, is a darker portrayal of independent childhood. Oscar is a teenager whose father is not present and his mother is abusive toward him. The kids in the Ransom books always have the safety net of their family. Excuse me. Okay. But Oscar is on his own. The only loving person in his life is his grandmother. He's very intelligent, but he's bullied for it because he lives in a rough neighborhood. In Hope in the Unseen by Ron Suskind, Cedric, like Oscar, is a very good student and he's picked on for his grades. His father is also absent, but unlike Oscar, Cedric has the love and support and complete devotion of his mother. Nina writes, Cedric becomes a man when he understands that his mother is not something to rise above and leave behind. She's what got him there so far, this far. Yankovic writes, from a place of hope and love grows a man. Cedric was cared for and in turn becomes a man who takes care of himself and of others. An example set by a mother and replicated by a son. Nina wonders, what examples am I setting? A book a day for a year? Obsessive and crazy, or dedicated and disciplined? Nina then gives an example of one of her lessons and the effects it had. Nina digs up a little maple tree growing in the shade of taller trees. It's a tiny one with beautiful red and orange leaves. Nina plants the tree in her patio. She's hoping that it will grow and provide just enough shade to pull a chair into and read out of the sun. But her kids ask her, why didn't you just go to a nursery and get a tree? She explained that it was not going to get any bigger in the spot it was in. She explained that the cost was merely the effort for the digging, the carrying, and the replanting of the tree. One of the boys says, "You don't have the money for a new tree?" Another one says, "You are cheap." Yet another one says, "She likes to dig." The last one tells the other, "Your mom is crazy." Nina answers, "Yes, all of above. And I wanted some shade in the patio." So you may have your own idea about the lesson you want to give, but how they are taken is not up to you. In figuring out how to raise your kids the right way, Nina relies on the example of her own mother and the mothers she likes in the books, like the character of Geraldine Coldshares in Laurie Colwyn's Goodbye Without Leaving. Nina feels a kinship with Geraldine. Geraldine is a singer in a band. Once she gets married and has a kid, she only wants to hang out with her baby. She believes that she has a purpose in life to sit in a rocking chair, mindlessly musing on her baby while she nurses him, burps him, and rocks him. This is exactly what Nina felt when the boys were little. She wonders to herself whether she's looking for guidance as much as approval. Madame de Staël, The First Modern Woman, by Francine Depley-Gray, also deals with raising kids. Madame de Staël wrote in a letter, "Enthusiasm is the emotion that offers us the greatest happiness, the only one that offers it to us. I've tried to instill in my own kids and guarded glee about and generosity in what happens around them every day. After all, what is curiosity but an enthusiasm to learn and to know?" Nina then tells that Anne Marie had boundless energy and endless curiosity for new ideas and new ways of looking at things. Nina wants her kids to be always open, like their aunt and Madame de Staël, to new and different ideas, visions, and goals. Nina also wants her children to be grateful for all that life offers. In The Laws of the Evening by Mary Yukari Waters, Nina finds a beautiful illustration of this gratitude. The stories in this book are mostly set in Japan during and after the Second World War. The characters all know too well about death, and they interpret it differently. But they do not fear death, and they share a reverence for life. They are deeply grateful to be alive. In the end, being alive is what matters. What else does Nina want for her kids? Hakuri Murakami writes in his memoir, "What I Talk About When I Talk About Running," about how, having decided to become a writer, he stuck to his goal with singularity. You got to learn to focus and how to prioritize and how to divide your time and energy. You may also have to give up some other aspects of life to master one thing. Resilience, enthusiasm, gratitude, focus, and independence, a strong foundation of family love. Nina was finding these components repeated again and again in the books she was reading. Nina ends the chapter in the following way: "Our time spent together would never be forgotten, and the lessons of love and security, of easy bliss and simple joy, would always be remembered." Next chapter is 17. It's called Fireflies Dancing in the Lawn. In this chapter, by means of reading, Nina travels across great and small distances and across time and years, finding new and old places to visit. It is about books as teleportation device. Nina goes to Italy with William Trevor in My House in Umbria, where she sees, quote, "a yellowish building at the end of a track, curving through a landscape of olive trees and cypresses, slopes covered with clover, and meadows sprinkled with poppies and geranium. The hill continues to rise gently, and there is a field of sunflowers." Nina travels by steel ship and crosses the ocean to reach Nigeria in JMG L'Ecclesia Onitsha. Nina goes on a midnight walk in Ireland in Claire Keegan's story, Walk the Blue Field. Nina loves William Butler Yeats. Yankovic writes, I always wanted to go to Ireland, having read and reread Yeats. Now I have been. The words, the physical and visual descriptions, the description of the sounds and the smells and the weather make things real and present and teleportations possible. Nina also has a desire for what is old and gone. Having lost her sister, her craving to go back in time, to revisit when she'd been alive, had grown stronger. Nina wants to revisit the places of her happy childhood. She's able to go back to these places and those feelings when she reads Kevin Canty's story, Burning Bridges, Breaking Glass, from his collection, Where the Money Went. Again, the description of Midwestern spring are able to pull her back to childhood and recover her youth. Nina writes, books were my time machine, my vehicles of recovery, reignited, blessed from childhood and beyond. Even when we read a book where the story has nothing to do with us and with our own experience, we can find resonance from recovered memory and an escape from the present. In The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner by Alan Sillitoe, a boy is sent to reform school for delinquency. His name is Smith. He loves his early morning runs into the countryside, which provide him with solitude and escape. He is recruited into the cross-country team. Nina does not have anything in common with Smith, but the story helps her recover a very distinct memory of an early morning walk she took in her 20s. She was attending an environmental conference and spending the night in a farmhouse. She can't sleep, so she sets out on a walk and heads into the last darkness of the night. As the first light is emerging over the mountains, Nina is overwhelmed by the beauty of the land and the smells of the morning and the trees and the vegetation. Nina feels like as if she could fly, borne away up into the mountains by the pure energy coming up from the awakening grounds and racing through her veins. She feels just like the Smith boy. She feels like she has never been so free. Yankovic writes, to go back in time was to return to when I felt optimistic and unbounded, back before my sister died. Everyone has a before and after. The times of our lives divided by an event of loss or suffering or hardship. In the months after Anne Murray dies, I lost all faith in the future. Nina adds, but I was wrong. Through this year of reading, I was recovering new possibilities and meanings. The books not only exposed her to new experiences, new people and places, but also brought her back to those times in her life when she looked forward to tomorrow. She ends the chapter with the following in the following way. Books are the frigate to wherever I want to go. My future is not infinite, I know that, but my life is full of possibility as it had been when I was just a girl. All right. I think that's it for today. We'll meet next week, hopefully. Today's show was made possible in a large part by the cosmological Big Bang, which scattered various particles and gases throughout the universe, which eventually led to the formation of galaxies, stars, and planets, and the solar systems like ours. And good fortune would have it, through this process, our planet was placed in such a distance to the star at the center of our solar system, not too close and not too far, which made an atmosphere and first simple and then complex life possible. So I salute the Big Bang and thank our good fortune.
Oh my god, this is like the worst thing ever. We're having some technical difficulties. My shadow isn't here. It's over, guys. Oh my god. Please, bro. Okay, hold on.
Su atención, por favor. Cubana de Aviación les anuncia la salida de su vuelo 456 con destino a La Habana. Les deseamos una feliz estancia en esa ciudad. Gracias.
Hola, CJ Oro. Voy a tocar una canción muy rápido porque yo tengo un invitado que no está aquí. Esta primera canción se llama Mulense de Cubanismo. Hope you guys enjoy. Peace. Marina Bio.